I would like to just, if you don't mind, just talk tonight about just sit right where you are. And that's just exactly. And I. Well, anyway, Charlie, if I can bother you for a minute, tear you away from Time Magazine, just this winter. I don't want to scare you off because I'd like to get on tape, if you don't mind, you know, maybe you're going to save that and copyright it for your ancestors or for posterity. But I think it'd be really interesting someday to talk to you about your trip down the Birch Creek and getting lost and getting found, and I don't want to do that tonight, but if do you think, do you have any objection to that someday?
No, I don't have any objection to it. It's already on tape, and you know, Larry Carpenter interviewed me twice.
He did?
Yeah, so it's...
I did hear that one time, but I didn't tape it.
Was even on TV.
Yeah.
For about 2 minutes.
Oh, well, I went more than 2 minutes. But anyway, this winter, you went back up to Beaver, and you went out trapping.
South to Beaver Creek, really. I didn't go to
Beaver Creek.
I flew direct from Fairbanks to the trap line.
And where is Beaver Creek?
Well, Beaver Creek is sort of lays in between Fairbanks and Fort Yukon. It's beyond the White Mountains, I believe it is, across the range.
Do you have a cabin there?
Oh yeah, I have one headboard's cabin and four line cabins, but this year I didn't use any but the main cabin.
Did you used to trap out of there then?
Yes, I've been there since 1949.
Every winter? Or
not
every winter, but off. Mm. But you used to live out there most of the time.
Yes.
I mean, for a long period you lived there.
Yeah.
Well, what took you up there in 49?
Oh, I don't know. I always wanted to get back in the boondocks, or whatever you want to call them, and the opportunity came about that time, and I just took advantage of it. Other times I was too poor to get away from the rat race, and the war was over by that time, and so on. And
were you living here in Fairbanks?
I was living in Fairbanks at that time, yeah, prior to that time.
That's when I came to Fairbanks in 49. What were you doing in Fairbanks? You been here for quite a while? Or?
Well, I was working at Ladd Field.
I see.
I came to Fairbanks in the fall of 1943, and the spring of 1944 I went down to Northway, and I was at Northway till the fall of 1946, and the job down there was abolished, and the operation was pretty well closed down, and then I came into Fairbanks and went to work on Ladd Field for the same outfit, which was the U.S. engineer.
But to get back to the trapping, you first went up there in 49.
49.
Well, did you take over somebody's trap line,
yeah,
or did you?
I did.
You didn't build the cabins yourself then?
No, I didn't.
Did you buy the trap line?
I bought the trap line. A retired trapper named Dick Morris, an old trapper named Dick Morris was up there, and he was getting pretty well along in years, and he wanted to sell out, and I had more money than I should have, I guess, and in a weak moment, I just bought it.
Dick Morris.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do? Retire into Fairbanks?
No, he retired and went to Fort Yukon, and he stayed in Fort Yukon for the next 10 years, and then he moved out to Cashmere, Washington, where he still is.
Did he at one time live at Point Barrow?
No.
Was he the Morris who lived up there?
No.
That was Oliver Morris.
Oliver Morris, yeah. I didn't, well, I knew they were up there, but I didn't really know them when they were there. I'd met the boy when their son was, just about the time our boy was born, I met their son. He was...
Well, I don't know. I don't hardly think he was around Barrow very much, was he, Oliver Morris?
I think they lived in Barrow for a while.
He had a store there, and he also had a store east of Barrow. On a point, I don't remember the name.
Well, it was Beachy Point.
Beachy Point.
But I don't think he was at Barrow very long, I don't know.
I think Tom Brower bought up the competition.
But this was Dick Morris.
Dick Morris.
You bought the trap line from in 49. Then when you went back there this fall, did you find it in good shape, or had anybody been in there and vandalized it?
Everything was all right. Everything was just as I left it 2 years ago. I was up, spent the winter up there 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And everything was just as I left it. Nobody had been around. That I know of, anyway. There's not a parent that they've been around.
But this winter, you trapped out of your main cabin and you didn't use the auxiliary.
Didn't use the other.
Now, on your trapping, you say you went up there in 1949.
Yeah.
You went there in 1949. The objective was to spend your possibly an extended period of time as a trapper.
Yeah.
And you trapped professionally 49 through what year?
Well, I think I was there about 3 years, and then the trapping situation didn't turn out too well, and the work situation was good, so I didn't go back for a few years. I think I was away one time for as long as 6 years. I didn't go up there. I maybe went up for a week or two at a time, but I didn't stay there steady.
Now, it's 1974 now, and you went there in 49. We're dealing with 25 years. How many years of the 25 years did you trap?
Oh, I don't know. I would say about three-quarters of that time.
Three-quarters of that time. Another question on trapping. What were the prices in 49? Were they good?
I don't remember. The prices were, they were only fair. They were nothing like they are now.
No.
Well, when you went there in 49, what did you trap? Just about the same animals that you would trap in 74? Winter 74?
For instance, there's been some changes. There were no lynx at that time there. There were no lynx in there for several years. And foxes were so cheap then that I didn't bother with them at all. But mink and marten and was what I was after mostly.
You say you didn't bother about foxes. Did you have special traps? So I mean, you could kind of segregate the animals by the types of traps you used?
Well, by the types of settings that you make.
Well, what kind of a trap did you use for a lynx and a marten?
Well, lynx, I prefer a number three trap or a snare.
I don't know what a number three trap is. Tell me.
Well,
just a little trap?
it's a pretty good sized trap. It's next to the largest trap that there is. And use a small trap for marten.
It might be prudent to say that traps are numbered from 1 through
five
for all practical purposes. Is that right?
From number 0 to number 5.
What's a number 5? A bear trap? Number 5?
Number 5, yeah. Number 5 is a bear trap, I believe.
4 would be wolf traps, is that right?
Yeah.
3 would be fox.
Fox and
lynx.
Marten, yeah. A fox and lynx.
And 2 would be the smaller.
Two is the same jaw spread as 1.5. So, for all practical purposes, there is no 2.
Now, we're talking about trapping, and we're thinking of conservation. Since 1949 to the present time, what has the fur population been?
Well, it's been up and down. It's down now. When the fur was cheap, it was population was at a higher level than it is now. It seems that's the way it goes, but that's...
Pardon me while I move my microphones a little bit. So anyway... Back to the winter of 74.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I'll just sit over here. You flew out to your main cabin on Beaver Creek, which is just the other side of the White Mountains from here, between here and Fort Yukon. When you went out there, what did you take with you? Besides, were your traps there? You didn't have to take.
No. The traps were always there, and I took.
You just had to take food stuff.
Foodstuffs mostly. So I took snowshoes, which I had brought in here and into town for safekeeping, and guns and ammunition and clothes, mostly lots of clothes and matches and beans and rice and things like that.
What do you mean, things like that? You take meat?
Yeah, I took, I think I had $21 worth of fresh meat.
Well, that wasn't much meat.
Well, no.
$21 worth wasn't much meat.
But it was a start that got me over the hump, you know, until I hoped to get them loose, and I was successful in getting one, but of course you never know whether you're going to get one or not.
Did he walk across your trap line, or did you walk across his trap line?
The moose?
Moose, yeah.
Well, I don't know. We kind of met, I guess. On we had a, must have had a sort of collision course. Unfortunately,
of course, it was in season.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, legal. Everything
sure.
Legal.
I was able to kill one close by. I didn't have to carry it for 40 miles. Within a half mile of the cabin, I guess. It took me three days to get it butchered and into the cabin.
But that was right out, soon after you went out.
Well, it was, I don't know, I've been there several days, a week or so, I guess.
Tell me again, when you went out in November?
The 8th of November.
8th of November. Mm-hmm. And you came back last week? 1st of March? During that time, from the 8th of November to the 1st of March, did you see anybody? Or?
Well, yeah, Steve Cooper, the U.S. District Attorney, was out there a couple times, and he...
He flew out in his own plane?
Yeah, he flew out in his own plane. Yeah.
He didn't fly out in that red bi-wing airplane?
No, he had a...
Luskin.
Did you have an airstrip, or did he just land in the
snow?
Well,
I had an airstrip... on the river ice that I had snowshoed out for him. And I marked it with willow brush so I could find it.
Did you know he was coming out? Had he made prior arrangements?
He didn't make prior arrangements, but he didn't give me a hard and fast date. And he came out when he could. And the weather over the weekends when he could get out, most of the time was atrocious one way or another. Sometimes it was too cold and... And sometimes it was foggy. For instance, Ian's Rome started out there a time or two, and they had to come back after they got over to the first hills here. The weather was too bad to come on over.
So it was soon after you went out there that you met the moose, and so you were set up for meat for a while.
Yeah.
And your traps were out there already.
Yeah.
And you took with you staples like, what, dry milk and flour?
No, I didn't take dry milk. I hate dry milk. I took
canned milk
and flour and sugar and rice and beans and macaroni, cheese.
Bacon?
Bacon. Eggs.
Excuse me while I answer the phone. Probably my son's girlfriend. When you flew out, tell me again how you went out, Fort Yukon Air Service?
Or? No, I took Al Wright's Air Service.
You know, that cat sheds all over the place. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just shove him on the floor right now? He's not that old and he's not that poor. He's just a pest. So you haven't been out there for... a couple of seasons, so did you have any wood left?
Oh, yeah.
You had it?
Yeah.
Nobody had been out. That's amazing that nobody had gone in and taken over.
Well, it's possible people had been by, but I had the cabin locked and nobody had broken into it, let's put it that way. My radio poles were both down, like they might have been kicked over, but possibly the wind knocked them down, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
What radio do you have out there?
Oh, a little old Japanese transistor.
Receiving only. Yeah. Broadcast. Receive only.
It operates on batteries.
Yeah.
What do you use for lights? Kerosene?
Gasoline.
Gasoline? Lantern. Coleman?
Coleman gasoline lantern.
Yeah. Well, what about your wife? How come she didn't go up there with you?
Well,
she's not a trapper?
She's not interested in that sort of thing. She likes her comfort.
Yeah.
She thinks that the only thing in the world is Portland, and she's just not interested in the outdoors.
Is she from Alaska or?
No, she's from, born in Oregon and never left there.
Anyway, back to the trapping. You had a wood supply and you brought your own food in, so yeah. First thing you did after you landed was start a fire and warm the place up and thaw it out.
And tried to keep the perishables from perishing until until the cabin got warmed.
Well, during the time that you had been gone, did you have an invasion by squirrels or anything like that? You didn't have any problems?
I never had any problem with the squirrels. They come to the cabin, then the tree squirrels come to the cabin, and the ground squirrels dig burrows around it, and they're quite active there during the summertime, but they didn't bother anything about the cabin, mm-hmm. in or out of the cabin.
So once you got the cabin in shape, then you inventoried your traps and started trapping right away, or did you just take your time getting back into the trapping?
No, I didn't bother to inventory the traps. I just started setting them out with all as fast as I could as soon as the season came open.
So you were mostly interested in marten and?
Well, I didn't know that there weren't any marten in that country normally, and I didn't plan on getting any marten. And I was concentrating mostly on lynx and fox, but there just wasn't any fur hardy around there.
What did you get this year?
Oh, I got a few lynx and fox and marten. I found a few close by, and I only got two mink, where normally I get from 25 to 30, and I got a few muskrat, four I think, and just happened to be a few in that area, and it was more or less convenient to pick them up, and a few weasel happened to wander in and into the traps, and a few squirrels, and so it was all in all it was a very poor season. But then there were until I started trapping beaver, that's about the way it went.
So the season, obviously it was the bad season, so then you turned to beaver.
Yeah.
Intentionally turned to trapping beaver. Well, to get back to the other traps, what'd you use for bait?
I used rabbits. That's standard rabbits mostly. And then after you get a few carcasses headway, you use the carcasses of whatever animals you catch.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I use some commercial scent, and sometimes I use scent that I made of my own. And
what? How do you make scent? What do you?
Oh, like a beaver castor and the oil of catnip and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I even used some skunk essence, which I got from outside, but I didn't have any success with it.
We don't have skunks in Alaska, do we?
No.
You don't have? Have you used skunk essence before?
Well, I don't recall I ever did, but not for that purpose. But it's supposed to be a good scent.
It is a good scent. I don't know about
it's
trapping.
It's good and strong.
It's good and strong.
It's good and strong.
So. What's the difference between beaver trapping and this other fur trapping? Beavers just obviously live in water and live in...
They live under the ice.
Under the ice.
It's just a heck of a lot of hard work, that's all it is.
But do you trap them with traps or do you use...
No, I use snares.
Snares.
But you've got to remember that you've got to get down, you've got to get a hole through the ice in order to make your set, no matter what you use.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you describe a total beaver set?
Well, the way I use, I make a beaver set, I just take a dry spruce pole, and after I get a hole through the ice, I stick a pole in the water and see how deep it is, and wire some poplar green popper on it for bait, and then set the snares, fasten the snares, open snares to the pole. That's about what it amounts to. And
would it be underwater? The snares be underwater?
The snares have to be in the water and under ice, under the ice, beneath the ice.
Well, how do you know when you have a beaver?
Well, you open up that hole again and pull up on your pole.
And the beavers drowned.
Oh, yeah, they drown right away.
Yeah.
They drown quickly.
A couple of questions. How large is this hole that you're chopping?
Well, from 2.5 to 4 feet or so.
In diameter.
Yeah, that's what I'm
And the ice of the beaver at that time would be about how deep?
The ice was thick? About 30 inches thick.
Okay. Smoke.
And you set this in water that's approximately how deep?
Well, of course, that all depends.
The pole has got to sit in the ground, is that right?
Well, don't have to. Because the ice will form right back, and then you can freeze the pole into the ice, so you don't have to drive it into the ground.
But you put this dry spruce pole down there, but you attach poplar.
Poplar to it for bait.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set your fastened snare, open snares to the...
Is there a name for that particular birch pole, bait, and snares? Haven't I heard you refer to it as a...
I refer to it as a Christmas tree, but I don't know if anybody else ever does or not, but...
What's Fabian Carey call it?
And Fabian, I think, both call it a Christmas tree. I've heard them referred.
That'd be we should get Fabian Carey together with you sometime, talking about trapping. That'd be a stimulating discussion, I'll bet you.
Now, you have to dig through the ice to get this thing up to see if you have a beaver.
Yeah.
When the ice refreezes, does it refreeze 30 inches again? Or?
It will in time. It will freeze about 2 inches, from 2 to 4 inches a night.
I see.
And if you leave it go long enough, it'll go down to the 30 inches. I'm not sure, but what it'll go back to even thicker than that.
But if you're near a beaver den, do they call it a den, a beaver den?
No, well, they live in houses here mostly, but sometimes they live in holes in the bank, which would be a den, you might say.
Mm-hmm. And you check these traps daily or
no,
weekly?
No, I generally check them every 3 days. Because I figure that you make so much noise that this scares the beaver away. And they're not apt to come around within 3 days.
You make so much noise chopping the ice.
Oh, you can't help but make noise.
Well, do the beaver in the wintertime, you know, notwithstanding the trappers or you or anyone else. Mm. Normally, would the beaver live above ground or below ice?
Well, they're always below ice. Yeah,
yeah, I would think so. Do you ever see beaver above ice in the winter?
No, I never have. I think perhaps under some circumstances, if they lose the water from around their house, they might come up onto the... I've heard other people tell about coming up to up onto the ice, but I think it was only because they were freezing out of their houses.
Well, their dens are, do they call them dens or houses?
Well, houses.
Usually they're built up above the water level, and then, but they always, they operate in the water by and large.
Right.
But their houses, where their young are born, are above water level.
Yeah.
So in the wintertime, they could also be above water level, but still have access to...
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to do a cross-section of a beaver house. I've never seen
Don, when we get to Don Draper, put in your notes, because Don Draper has done research on this as to the temperature of the houses and...
the insulation they built into it.
Just about everything there is about a beaver, including their language. I don't know what Don can talk to them.
Yeah. They must have an ingenious instinct on insulation, you know, if they have part of their house above, like when it's 40 below at the bottom of a creek, you know, in some of those low areas.
Well, of course,
I imagine it gets pretty cold.
And beaver can even sing, according to him.
Well, of course, they're always down where it's warmer than that. They're always down in a temperature where it is above freezing. They're in water,
which is above freezing,
Now, in this beaver trapping, and you're out at beaver, and there are many people who do the same thing as you do. You live alone, and when you're at beaver, you're probably on a straight line 50 miles from the nearest village, right? Which would be beaver, maybe more. Fort Yukon would be 90 miles. There are lots of hazards in this particular thing. This year you experienced a hazard. Would you be interested in relating your experience and exposure to frostbite and the dangers of a mishap?
Well, I had worked all afternoon making this set, and of course you get splashed with water when you go through the ice to a certain extent, and I was trying to hurry and get this set made before, well, during that day it's already dark by that time, and so I had my Christmas tree all ready to go into the water, and it was up on a little mound of snow there where I put it there to hold it upright while I was working on it, and I just simply incautiously turned suddenly, and I just slipped into the hole.
The hole you dug?
Yeah.
Holy cow. How far down did you go?
Well, I didn't get enough wet. I didn't get wet above the waist, put it that way.
How far were you from your cabin?
About 3/4 of a mile.
Holy smoke.
You have any idea how cold it may have been?
Well, I think I judge it's about 20 below.
And you froze yourself, to understand, right?
Yeah, I froze one foot a little bit. I froze a toe and side and a little bit on the heel. But
well, what did you got? How did you get out of the hole?
Well, it was no difficulty. I just grabbed the. just grabbed the edge of the ice and just kicked myself up and made a hunch, and I was out. I was really surprised at how quick
you,
I got.
What, did you hightail it back to your cabin then, or did you put your go ahead and set your Christmas tree down?
No. I just left it there, yeah. And I started right for the. I just changed gloves. I just happened to have my fur mittens. I had just laid aside there, and I just. Threw down the wet ones and grabbed the others and started right for the cabin without missing.
Was the cabin warm? Did you keep it warm?
Well, the cabin was fairly warm. The fire was out, but it was still warm from other last time I was there. But no great difficulty. Clothes froze en route, and they're just like boards. And I had a little difficulty getting out of my parka, but. And getting off my moccasins, but everything turned out all right.
What'd you have on? Besides, you had what? One pair of long underwear.
I had two pairs of long underwear, and I think four pairs of socks, and a pair of wool pants, and a pair of overalls over those.
And you got soaked clear to the skin?
Oh, no, not really.
Not really.
I just got a little. No, I didn't get soaked. I didn't stay in the water long enough, and I had on so many layers that they kept the water out pretty well.
With that much wool, you know, that's a water repellent itself. But you froze part of one foot.
Yeah.
And did you have any trouble with that? Did you get infected?
No, I didn't infect it, but when the toe, big toe, formed a kind of a water blister. So I figured that the only way it was ever going to get well was to open it and get rid of that blister. So that's what I did, and about 3 days it was all right.
Well, was that early in the season?
No, that was in around the 1st of February, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And you came in here 1st of March.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
How many beaver did you get?
I only got 6. I could have got more. I could have got a full limit, but it was just too much work for me. That involved too much travel and just too much shoveling and chopping ice.
Did you really go up there to trap this winter, or did you just go up there to be with Charlie Mays all winter?
No, I kind of...
You don't have to answer that, Charlie.
I kind of figured out that I would go back there to trap and solve some of the questions that I had pending from other years. I remember that I'd made this set in this way, and I just wonder if I made it another way, it would be more successful.
Uh-huh. Well, was it more successful?
Well, I really couldn't make a comparison because there wasn't enough animals. The population of animals wasn't dense enough to really resolve the questions.
Had you had an accident like that before, falling in a beaver hole?
No.
In all your years?
I've had canoes overturned with me, but not in...
No, I mean actually in trapping, winter trapping.
No. That's the worst accident I ever had.
Hmm. Well, what precautions did you take in case something like that happened and you couldn't have made it back to your cabin? Did you have someone checking on you periodically?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't have any. In fact, I had made arrangements with this flying company to pick me up the 12th of April. And when Steve Cooper came out there, well, I had just decided that maybe it'd be a good time to come to town. So I just decided that I'd had enough and I cut it off by about 6 weeks.